I'm good.
Okay.
Better.
Because we are going live. And that voice you're hearing is our friend Zoe. You've probably heard her on our Friday streams for Casual Fridays, but we had a lot to talk about around video games and we wanted to hear her opinion on it. So we've got Zoe joining as a first time guest on the actual podcast. Welcome, Zoe.
Hello.
Yeah,
I feel like I'm most known here for grabbing ham with my bare hands and playing Mario Kart.
A founding member
of Vampire Weekend.
You're also the Gary Oak to my Ash Ketchum. You're the Apollo Creed to my Rocky.
Wow.
We are fighting game rivals.
Yes, we are.
Wow. Way too much credit on both of those counts.
Mm-hmm.
Who
wouldn't want to be Apollo Creed?
Apollo Creed's pretty cool.
He beats Rocky in the first movie. He beats
him. I mean, in the one that the best one.
Anyway.
Also, yes. Bobby, I'm as usual, I'm just a little bit quiet. Can you bump me up a little bit?
When are you going to take a hint, Chase? That's my question.
If you don't want to have me at the proper volume, half of this podcast is going to be too quiet.
The problem is that the three of you are coming through the same channel. And the other two seems to sound fine. I don't know what's going on. Anyway, that's inside baseball. That's Chase that you might be hearing. More than likely, maybe a little bit better now. And maybe. We've got Johnny here also.
Hi.
And it's episode 374 of the Casual Hour. It's May 8th. We've got too many episodes. Nobody needs this. We've got a hell of a lot of stuff to talk about tonight. Some really unfortunate news in the gaming industry, but we got some cool games around that as well, with things like Hades 2, Grey Zone Warfare, Children of the Sun, and Manor Lords. So strap in, get excited. We've got a friend here to help us out tonight, and we're going to kick back and get into it. Zoe, as you know, we do a little bit of what you've been playing, and I want to hear more about Manor Lords. You've given me some hot takes on off pod, as they say, but I want to know what's happening to Manor Lords.
I've heard Dwarf Fortress be invoked here, and now I'm very curious.
Yeah, I mean, so I feel like it's the hottest city builder right now. I feel like it's still one of the top sellers on Steam. A lot of people talking about it. And I think for good reason for a lot of it. Overall, I feel like it's a little rough right now, but there's a lot of things I really enjoy about it. Like you, Johnny, bringing up like the Dwarf Fortress aspect. This game has like a very, for those who don't know, it's basically a medieval city builder, some colony, some kind of stuff that's deep on kind of like the historical simulation stuff. And it's also part Total War style, real time strategy tactics.
And one person made it, right? Is that true?
Yeah.
It is a solo effort. I believe he spent 7 years making it. And it really does have a lot of that like labor of love aspect. Like when you start the game, you start with like your 10 little citizens. And like they have an ox and they have to drag the lumber everywhere, and you see them cut the lumber and like bring all the branches off the trees, and they're branching, and like you could follow that little ox just hanging around, like going around and just enjoying his little life, and there's a little ox pen, and like the whole game has that kind of level of detail to it where it's like you just want to watch the woodworkers, like they're gonna do this just like how they did it, you know, in the 1000s, and you're gonna watch them bring this tree down and do it, and then you can have your forester planting, and like, and that stuff's really cool. And you can build your town. I think one of the big like major innovations this game has that's really cool is that it has like your traditional like kind of residential zones like a lot of city builder stuff does, but it allows you to make shapes that aren't just like typical tile-based stuff or like set rectangles. So you can kind of draw like an open border and it'll be like, we can fit these many houses here. And then like an extra side attachment here. And you can kind of fit stuff into like naturalistic places so that you can fit more in.
I'm getting the vapors over here, Zoe. Like,
time period.
What's that, Chase?
I was saying that sounds more appropriate for the time period, that you wouldn't just have straight city blocks like you would in a SimCity or something like that.
Zoe, exactly. Do you do anything like this? I heard a good friend of the show, Vinny Caravella, talking about how he was making plots of land that way. But when families would sign up to be in his village, he had like a founder's lane where he was giving people bigger property lines to like be the first people coming into his village. So they just like have like their named streets as his village becomes something.
Yeah. I mean, you could kind of do something like that because you do have to like, so this game kind of tries to simulate, I guess, parts of medieval life where like your residential things can have a little add-on onto them if they have enough space. Right. So you could put a little chicken den in there, or like these guys are also going to be tanners. So you don't just have, it's like you have like kind of artisans in your village or also, you know, doing stuff at home. And it's like the house is kind of multi faceted with things. But you have to level them up, and basically the way you level up is by granting basic amenities, like pretty basic city builder stuff, but it's all based on proximity. And because you're drawing all your stuff out, like I definitely had like a boondocks out in, you know, the woods kind of area where all my new people would come in. I actually had a system, and it's one of the kind of the, to kind of get into some of my complaints about the game maybe, or some of the stuff that I feel is a little early right now for it that could go. Because it's so wants to simulate all this stuff and everybody has their own job and you're like assigning people to places, you have to always have a family open as a builder family. So basically what I was doing is I had at least one block that needed to be constructed at all times, because if you don't have enough space for people to come in, they won't join to do it. But like in order to have the space, you have to also always have at least one person be on construction, which kind of limits you doing it. So I was having people build their own houses.
Oh,
I was like, you show up here, you build your own house, and then I would fill in another block to do it.
Yeah, going on there.
Yeah, so there was definitely maybe some classist elements going. And then eventually at some point you do build your own manor house and you can have your little guy that you're directing around your village with your little feathered cap, like so, you know, I'm
please tell me you've seen this. All right. Actually, don't tell me if you've seen it. Here's what I'll say. Who can name? They've already modded this game and that view. You, when you go down and you're walking the village, what character has been added in for you to be in this game?
Is it Lord Farquaad?
You're not far off.
I mean, I was going to say like Ministry of Silly Walks, John Cleese.
It's fucking Shrek.
That's pretty good.
You can walk around as Shrek. It's zoomed in and all of a sudden it's just fucking Shrek walking through.
You got to stay out of a swamp.
It's really fucking dumb. But if the internet continues to be undefeated when it comes to inserting Shrek where he should not be. Or should be.
Shrek
should be in Garfield.
Oh, so man, in our corporate future, we can only dream so. Ready,
here's what I want to ask you, because we kind of do this question a lot on the show. I know you offline in the games that I see you playing. How, like, we have other games like this where we have a monster train, so I don't really need to play another, you know, roguelike deck builder because we've got that here. I know that you liked Against the Storm, and there's been a handful of other ones that meet the genre. Can Manor Lords hang, I guess, in this? Like, do you need this
for
game?
I feel like it has enough unique aspects and enough cool things. And, like, the battle system and stuff is a really cool idea. Like, being able to, like, basically constrict your citizens and make them your fighting force as you go on is a really cool idea. And then having it kind of have this, like, you have like almost a competitive aspect where you're fighting against the baron who has, you know, your land against it that you're trying to claim. That stuff's really cool. Right now, that stuff kind of feels a little early. Yeah. Like the baron
bake, right? And this is early access, this game, right?
Yeah, it's very is like early access. Like he's been working on it a long time, but definitely like feels that way. Like, for example, like you start with one tile on like your map, and the baron starts with two tiles, already starts with an advantage on things. And it doesn't seem like kind of like a lot of strategy games, it's not like the AI is playing like a real person. They just kind of give them more supplies and more things. Yeah. But it's like they've already escalated so quickly. And because the game kind of limits your construction based on like your population things, you can only get so much and you need to have a family at every single thing that you build in order for it to function, because you can't leave them unmanned. You kind of end up in this very like, I felt like I spent a lot of time waiting to get another population to put my thing in, and was kind of like waiting for like artificial constrict stuff, which I don't mind as much, and kind of has that kind of chill kind of thing. But if you're trying to do the competitive part against the Baron, they already have an advantage, and it's like not even the first year is done yet, and he already has a huge army that he's like moving in. It's like you can kind of do it. And right now, the battle stuff itself, I've also been playing a lot of Total War Warhammer 3, so I feel like I have a good comparison point for it. It's like the battles.
You prepared
like,
for this?
I have prepared. I've been playing all the hits. Is that the battle system at this point kind of feels like more it comes down to who has the most numbers on there, and not as much deep strategy. And there is kind of limited amounts of units and things you can kind of do like. And like the development tree is cool, but it's like, you know, if you want to get some essential things, like to get helmets, you have to spend a point to unlock the blacksmith to get the thing. And it's like, well, that's an essential part to make my units there. So I have to spend that point there. And it's like, there's cool stuff and things to do, but like right now I feel like it's like a lot of like really great ideas, that need to be kind of, honed into more of the game stuff. And like also its attention to detail, while also awesome, sometimes leads to it being very slow, which like I feel like if you're kind of into that kind of cozy, like don't mind it kind of being more that kind of thing, it's cool. But like compared to something like Against the Storm, where it's like I always have a decision to make, there's always something happening, like there's a roguelike aspect to it where like I'm constantly juggling these new things coming in. I think that game will eventually have that, but like right now it's early, but it's really cool. Definitely like something that I'm looking forward to.
That's what kind of pushed me away from it for the time being was
just needs a little time, right?
This is taking a while. And
well also, yeah, to that
point, yeah.
If you said it's been in development for 7 years by basically one person and now it's out in early access, I kind of
wonder. Sold a million copies already.
Well, that's great. More? But like what's the roadmap of this? Because now you have all these people playing it and I'm sure giving feedback, and you're still just one person.
Well, I imagine you could use some of that money to maybe hire a contractor or someone to help.
Maybe, yeah. But like, there's also a lot of onboarding to that. Like I just kind of wondered like what if anything they've said in the early access in terms of roadmap.
Get to 1.0. I know the dev commented because people are like, why don't you just hire 50 people so you can update the game faster? And he's like, it's not that easy for a lot of things. Yeah. But also people are putting Shrek in. Like I feel like once it hits 1.0, you get some mod tools in there.
For sure.
Like I want the full Shrek experience. Once you get the full Shrek experience, I feel like that game is an instant 10 star. Yeah.
Sure.
Says they're planning on it being in early access for around a year, but that might change.
Okay.
I can see that.
Design develops with player feedback.
Right on.
I feel like that game could definitely expand a lot of really cool ways. It just kind of has to get its core stuff kind of down, and kind of get the core loop a little more.
It certainly has a bright future ahead of it.
Yeah.
Like, it can't be Dwarf Fortress right out the gate. I guess Dwarf Fortress is still in early access.
He still has, what, 15 more years left?
We've got to simulate every aspect of life. So as soon as they figure that part out, it'll be out.
Oh my god. Well, that was Manor Lord from Zoe. Thanks for that update. I was really curious to hear more about it, and I'm sure we'll talk on maybe some Friday streams more about it as you play it.
Yeah.
Johnny, speaking of early access, why don't we go to hell?
Ooh, buddy. That's the goal.
I need to go to hell all the time.
You're trying to get to hell to defeat Kronos. We're talking about Hades 2. I was fortunate enough to receive a review copy of this game from Supergiant, and so I've been playing it for about a week now. I've got 13 hours or so into it, and when Hades 2 was announced, I was like, that's interesting. You know, they've never made a sequel before. Hades 1 was such a success. It makes a lot of obvious sense for them to make a sequel to that very successful game. But I wonder how different and how fresh it'll feel. And, you know, will they be able to capture what made that first game?
We love so, this. So we'll take whatever you'll give us because we're sick little pigs.
Yeah. But no, Hades.
We've seen games like these have sequels that don't go far enough.
Right.
Like we see like the Rogue Legacy 2s that we go like, I mean, that wasn't quite there. And then we also see like the Risk of Rain 2s that go, we're going to make a completely different game almost.
And
like, where is this falling on that spectrum?
It still is Hades, but it feels different enough. Like it feels iterative in a way that I was hoping it would. And the weapons and things that you're using all feel completely different than any of the weapons that Zag had. There is an added element of being able to charge your attacks. And so you have boons and upgrades that you get that are affecting one part of your attack or the other, or maybe stacking in another way. And it's so good. It's so good, you guys.
I'll hop in here. I'll help out with that. So the thing that he's talking about that I think is really fucking slick here, Chase, is two parts. I'm going to touch on the equipable part first. I'm going to go into some of the mechanics that he was alluding to. So the equipable part of this, you have a menu that you can basically pop into with the D-pad, and that lets you equip and change these on the fly. So maybe you run into a room where having one of these applied to a special versus an attack or, you know, a dash, you can kind of get creative on the fly. So it's, you know what you're getting, but you can activate other pieces, which makes it another layer of strategy for one of these.
Yeah, that sounds a lot like what they did with Transistor of here's a power and you can put it in these different aspects and it affects the way that the power works.
Yeah. And, you know, you're upgrading your hub. You have a cauldron because you are a witch. Your name is Melanoe. And you're Zag's sister, little sister. And in the game, Kronos has taken over Hades and cast you out. And it is up to you to fight your way down there to defeat him, to reclaim
your Kronos birthright. Was Kronos in the first one?
Alluded to.
I don't think so. No. Yeah.
Okay.
There are a lot of gods and other characters that were not present in the first game.
I do want to go really quick onto the mechanic of the combat, Chase, because I think for you, like, I'm sure you're not playing this. So this is an early access right now, and Chase is waiting for it to bake.
That's kind of where I'm at with it as well right now.
Like, for sure. if it's anything like Hades 1, which also went through a relatively long early access period, it's already great. I'm not worried about the quality. It's more of just more stuff than I'm ready to to wait until the full game comes out and then just play.
Yeah, whatever. Same. I enjoy the 1.0 version so much when I played the original Hades that I know it's great right now, and honestly, every time I hear someone talk about it, I'm a little closer to being like, oh, maybe I'll just pull the trigger on it.
My goal is I'm going to complete a run, and then I'll stop. That's my goal.
Yeah.
There's a level here with the combat when you were doing the last game, the first game, that you would get, you like, hey, I know if I get this weapon, I know the things I could pick up as boons to make it better, but it was kind of on that. But you always had just like a core kind of approach to it. But now that you have these charged attacks that you have a little bit more fluidity with, and Johnny, chime in if you want, I found myself not only thinking about like upgrades, but I'm now looking at the arenas as where I would maybe activate one of those abilities. So like you have a hex field that creates a slow ability, and then you have
a range. So I can make a choke point here, and then while they're slowed down, I'll use my big AoE attack. Or, you know, like there's an axe you can get, and one of the boons you can get makes it's the area of like in front of you that it does damage to much larger. So it almost becomes a ranged weapon, even though it's an axe. And it's just,
that's cool.
It's amazing. Like
just a dash, but you also have the ability to hold that and run. And when you come out of that sprint, some of these upgrades actually have a trigger event and an end event. So I can trigger it and shoot off a little bit of a burst of like ice damage. But when I end it, so if I sprint into a crew, it's going to actually do a blast attack there.
Yeah.
So you go into your half A press and then full A press and you get the
I see. Today when I was on a run, I had one that whenever I was sprinting, it like a tornado formed around me. And then whenever I stopped, it stayed there for a few seconds and did damage to whatever that's was really around me. And it's just like it's just it feels like a studio just at the peak of their craft. You know, like they know exactly what they want to do, how they want to execute it. It feels like, and I don't know what the employee retention is there at Supergiant. I know they've added some more people to the team, but it feels
talk
like
to
it's
your
being
buddy Greg. Ask him.
Yeah. Yeah. Please.
Yeah, best friend.
Yeah. But you know, you can tell when something, a project is made by a group of people that are working really in, like everything just fits together in a way that makes sense.
And that historically protects them as a team and everything will be fine.
Yeah. Yep.
They never bad so, ever
happened. So I assume, does that like extend to, because one of the things I was wondering about the early access stuff is, are the characters and dialogue and story stuff like I know we've touched on the combat stuff a lot, but I want to know like who's are all the gods super hot? Can I still talk to all of them?
They're all
Machine. Like, are they? Do they treat the main character differently? I guess like because it sounds like your place in the world, while you know similar, it's like almost you know you're.
Yeah, so they mean
relationships like kind of the opposite.
You are the daughter of Hades, and so. Some of the comments that they might make to Zag, you know, they might make a similar type comment to you, or they'll comment on, like, you know, I feel so, you know, I hate what happened to your family and et cetera, et cetera.
But Zoe, what if all the characters from Hades went to art school?
They're all very hot. It's a very horny thing.
That's basically what this is. It's like the alt version of all the characters from the first game.
That's very interesting. Okay, good to know.
I saw they did. There is like some unfinished. There are unfinished assets, and the story and stuff may change. Like they make that
plenty of assets in that game. I'll tell you that much.
Yeah, Johnny, you mentioned that your goal here is to complete it once. Do you know that it's going to have the same kind of structure as Hades 1, where you need to beat multiple runs to get?
That is the assumption I am acting under. Okay. There are two paths. Like there is a path that you can take up to Olympus, and there's one that you take down to Hades.
Okay, that's cool.
And you have to get to a point where you can concoct.
You're just starting on the surface world right now. You're
not quite. Like it's because once you go, it's a whole thing. You have to get materials to make a potion that lets you hang around up.
You can't
at the
handle
top
my potions.
You can't handle my potion.
You got to get the Wadjet Eye so then you can get to...
Yes.
Okay.
Potions are too strong for you, Traveler.
Right.
I've only made it to the second boss fight so far, which is already a moment of the year for me. Like,
Is that the second boss, the Siren? Is that right?
I wasn't going to say anything, but yeah.
Oh, well.
Yes. Oh, wow. Another thing from Greek mythology. Yes.
Yeah. All right.
That's fine.
Is it bird siren or fish siren?
Fish, because it's in Poseidon's realm is where you are.
I mean, I'm going to have to write some letters, but fine.
But yeah, it's very, very good already. And
awesome.
I don't know how much more I'll play until I pause.
I think it's 30 right now. This is Super Giant Games. $30.
And this actually has a pretty short early access, right? Like this comes out in August?
No. They said it's going to run through at least the end of the year.
Yeah, I think they say 2025 is what they're aiming for because they want to give themselves some leeway, I guess.
Okay.
Yeah. So yeah, those are my Hades 2 early access impressions.
Nice, man. Well, let's keep this early access train rolling here on the show tonight and talk about Gray Zone Warfare. This is a game that came out into early access in the thick of all the Escape from Tarkov controversy that we spoke to, I think, briefly on one of the new segments, but it came out on April 30th in early access, and it's very early in its access. I will say that much. This is from Mad Finger Games, and if you're not familiar with it, it seems to be a more loot focused take on the loop from an Escape from Tarkov. You are in a fictional Middle East. I believe it's like a fictional South Asian country, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah. And it's also, I think the big differentiator is it's also open world.
Yes, it's open world. There's three factions. They each have a different base within the map, and you can pick your faction at the start of a season. You can only play with other people in your faction. So if you have friends that are on a separate one, you can't link up without wiping the character and redoing that. But you leave your base and you go out running quests for the vendors that are at your camp. You level your vendors up, who allow you to buy and sell better gear with them. So you have a medic, you have a gunsmith, and you have just a gear, like helmets and vests and whatnot, backpacks. But it is a tough game. It's a pretty unforgiving game. The AI is really impressive. The nice thing about this is that there's two modes. You have a PvP, well, still PvP or PvEVP, and then you just have straight up PvE here, and you can load into either one, which has made it really nice because you can go into the PvE and work on leveling up and getting the maps down, and then if you want a bit more of the thrill, you can go and do more of the PvP stuff with the other factions. But I've not played a lot of games like this, and Zoe's been a great partner in going out and checking these things out. We had a hell of a run.
I'm also fairly new to them. I have a little bit of experience here and there, but I wouldn't call myself a deep tactical shooter fan.
It's cool though. Like the corpse run stuff sucks because if you die, you know, you got to go find your body and get your shit, and that can be a bummer.
Nobody likes a corpse run.
No. Yeah,
except maybe Ted Bundy.
That sounds like a emo pop punk song from the early 2000s.
We just saw Postal Service in Death Cab last night.
It's very, very top of mind. But I think even like just it's high stakes and playing with Zoe, we've been able to say like I have a good time at least of like learning, I would say. Like, oh yeah, that didn't work out. It's been fun.
Yeah, I feel like it's been cool, especially being able to play together with people and like feeling like you know, actually having to like kind of plan your stuff out and like be aware of your surroundings. And that part's really interesting about it. Some of the stuff, like, again, early access, like first release, where I feel like they got to iron some stuff out. Like some of the faction stuff, like having to only be able to play with your certain faction. And for sure. Like something we ran into trying to play was that even though it's all open world, it's still very task-based and mission-based. And unless you're synced up on the same mission, just because your squad mate does something doesn't mean you get anything from it. Which, I feel like it's a little silly. So it's like now me and Bobby are like, okay, well, let's make sure we're finishing stuff kind of like at the same time to do it. But it's like those are fixable problems.
I learn something about that too. So you know how we were doing the gunny portion because we wanted the guns? So some of these quest lines stop when you get to a certain point with vendors because they're all interconnected. And I also found out that the one that we did where we were trying to find the body, you could just find the body and tell the gear guy about it and not put the tracker on it for the gunny because they don't trust each other. So depending on what you wanted to level up more. Yeah. So like they do have, and I think the reason being is that I bring that up. Maybe I didn't care about the gunny being upgraded as much as the other characters. So that gives me that option while we're doing it to like say, you know what, I don't want to put the tracker on and have to assume that piece with it. So I found out about that today. I don't know if that's the exact thing. I think they should get more clarity, but that is something to note for.
That is cool. I think that stuff's cool. And like, the ideas they have, you know, trying to link that stuff up is interesting. I kind of wish that stuff was built into the open world part more because it's like right now it's like there's basically like a low tier, mid tier and high tier area all within reach of each faction's kind of starting point. And then those same places are mirrored like two other times around the island for other people, like in front of their faction spawn. And it's like because everything's like through the vendors and stuff like that, I feel like there's less reason to kind of like I kind of wish the quest was like, oh, we're having this emergent gameplay thing where like, instead of trying to plant this tracker on this body, like, we're planting this tracker on this truck because we're following real players back to their base and we sure. want to see where it's going, like, kind of thing. Like, I hope that's where the direction of the game moves to.
Yeah.
If they can, which maybe is asking a lot and kind of different than where it is now. Well, but I am really enjoying a lot of the stuff, and I feel like the shooting's really cool. I really great. Like the way they've realistically modeled some of the bullet models and things, and like the interesting takes they have on health systems and stuff. Like, it's very cool, but I'm kind of curious to see if they can get around those kind of
totally
stuff, or what they do to address those.
They had a big presentation a day or two ago where they were talking about the roadmap for it, given the critical success it's seen. It's sold like crazy. They're definitely adding in new AI factions, because you don't have that right now. You just have AI enemies. So they're actually going to put in opposing AI factions to fight against.
That'd be cool.
So I'll send it to our Discord and let you check it out there. It's a pretty cool video. And this is Gray Zone Warfare. If you are looking for a unforgiving but good, like, I think there's an addiction quality to the loops that they have. Like, I'm going to do one more. Check it out. There's three different price points for it, depending on what you get. You get more storage and in-game weapons, but you can get into it for $35, which is also really appealing.
Would you classify this as a game for sickos?
I actually think, of course.
Yeah,
but I think this
a
little is the
bit.
Game,
yeah, but
this
it's
is
like
the,
a different kind of sicko.
Yeah.
It's like...
DayZ
it's
sicko,
like Tarkov is black tar heroin, and you're not quite ready for that.
Yeah, you don't want none of this
exactly.
shit, do we?
No, this is like, this is kind of like, I feel like this is kind of like Tarkov or almost Arma, but more for normal people.
Yeah.
Like, from the stories I've heard, it's not a game you want to play when your mind's altered.
This is, no. Well, depending on what you do. Here's what I'll tell you. There's a Steam review that says... this is Tarkov for people that have a family and a 9-to-5. And I think that's probably like the best way you can put it. And I've been able to go in and do a run. I'm having such a great time. We're going to play it on Friday night, and I'll probably do a quick look eventually. But Zoe, Johnny, and I, and Chase will be gone. He'll be at this family's place, but we'll be hanging out. If you have two families, then chat.
I think you've got bigger problems.
You got to start playing Destiny. I'm sorry.
You definitely don't need to do that.
Luke's missing. They want you to play other games, so they'll respect your time. I'm just telling them what they said.
Time they did say that. Yes, that's no longer true. But
all right. So that was a Gray Zone Warfare update. We are actually not going to be talking about another early access game, Chase. But one that you...
Yeah, I'm not a coward, so I played a video game that's out.
When it's actually like, done and cooked. I like my steak well done, just like my video games.
Give them money and they give you a finished video game. How about that?
What are you playing?
Innovative.
I think that's pretty cool. I played Children of the Sun.
Fuck yeah.
Bobby, did you finish this game?
I have not finished it. Okay. But
I finished it. I played it in two sessions. I just kind of shotgunned that game. Which is a little ironic since it's a game about a sniper rifle. That game rips.
Yes,
that game's so good.
It's incredible.
I won't talk about it too much because we have a quick look that we've already done.
Yeah, I'll grab the link to that.
Go check that out. And I think Bobby did a really good job of driving that one. But
thanks.
It's just such a cool game with a lot of style to it. It is pretty dark. The story is pretty vague. I mean, it's not told to you specifically. It's kind of just images that flash across the screen, but those images kind of rough.
They are kinda very rough.
I heard it's the feel good game of the year.
You know,
feel bad.
There's a catharsis, so you know.
I mean, the sun's bright, shiny, so I feel like there's
My problem is that I just keep singing the Always Sunny in Philadelphia Dayman song.
Going to make a comment about
instead
that.
Instead of Champion of the Sun, I say Children of the Sun. Every
Children time. Of the Sun.
Yeah. You're a master of the sniping and killing of everyone. Yeah. It happens a lot. So the basic idea of this game, for people who don't know, is you are on the edge of the world and you can go back and forth. It's a game that you only play with the mouse, which I thought was really interesting. I thought you were going to have to use the arrow keys for it.
No, but, just the mouse.
Yeah, so you move your mouse and it moves your character one way or the other, kind of along a line. Sometimes that's a curved line, so you can kind of go around the arena.
You're just tilting it, right? Like, that's all it is. Like, barely moving it and it'll just go.
Right, and you don't get, like, full control. You don't get to go all the way around in a circle except for, like, a couple of missions. But for the most part, you get, like, a semicircle of areas that you can walk between, and you can use that to scout out who you're going to snipe. And it has a very Splinter Cell Conviction or, like, Metal Gear Phantom Pain kind of feel, mm-hmm. where you're tagging enemies. And you can also tag... You can tag some inanimate objects and also some... like non-targets. Like I don't want to spoil it too much, but there are some animals that you might be able to see in the world where you can also.
Oh, I love animals.
I don't know, maybe I'll target that too.
Does anything bad happen to animals? I sure hope not. Don't tell me.
Look probably, at your feet, Zoe. Fine. Look at your feet. Don't look out there.
I want to tag those animals, give them a pet.
So the only way you interact with the world is by shooting. So use this information as you will. But the basic idea here is you're scouting this whole area out and you're going to shoot the sniper shot. But you have the ability to wanted style bend bullets. And every time your bullet connects with a thing, a valid target of some sort, you then like shoot into first person into that vision. And now you can take another shot from that angle.
And Drive for San Francisco.
Yep.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah. So you're
bending
that's
this
a video game.
Forth.
It's a
really,
video
really
game.
Cool. It's a great idea for a game. And I think they execute it really well. There are a few things that they start to add in the mid and later part of the games that I feel like makes it a bit of a pain in the ass. There's one specific enemy type. I'm like, fuck, I hate fighting these things.
Yep.
but it also just makes you play the game in a different way. And I thought that was really cool.
Is it super hot-esque?
Yeah.
Yes, absolutely.
Yeah.
Because as soon as you take the first shot, which is still in real time, as soon as that makes a connection, then the game goes into a like super slow-mo where now you can take better shots at anybody else that might be moving. So like there's a thing that happens kind of midway through where there's a guy in just a car and he's driving around doing donuts like a fucking asshole. And you're like, I need to snipe this motherfucker.
Yeah.
But you don't want to snipe him on the first shot because it's in real time. So the car is moving really fast and you're not going to make that shot. So what you want to do instead is hit his buddy who's sitting right next to him or who's like sitting at a campfire while this guy's doing donuts around him. And then once you've cranially extracted that man,
yes.
then you can look around and go, well, now you're super slow in that car and I'm going to shoot you. Or even better, I'm going to shoot your gas tank and make you explode. Game fucking rules.
Okay.
One little nagging issue that I have, and then I'll move on, is that it kind of has this a little bit super hot, a little bit super meat boy. As soon as you fuck up, you can restart right away and you get right back in there. And one of the nice features is that it keeps all of the tags for you. So it's nice. Great. Mm-hmm. All the guys are already tagged, so I don't have to worry about re-tagging them. But it takes away all the tags of your non-essential targets. So like if you're tagging animals or gas tanks or things like that.
Yeah, those go away.
And that's a pain in the ass to retarget that stuff.
Agreed.
Especially when you're getting to later stages in the game where it's less prescriptive of what you're supposed to do and more freeform. And there's like 20 non-valid targets that you're like, okay, well, like I got to re-kiss that one and re-kiss that one and re-kiss that one and re-kiss that one. And that's a bit of a pain in the ass. I don't really see the reason why you wouldn't just auto tag those as well. But overall, I had a really good time with it. I think there's some really cool stuff in there, especially that final mission is just so freeform.
I think I'm really close to it, by the way.
There's 26 missions in total. So
I think I'm close.
You might be close. That final mission, there was a lot of expletives being yelled by me.
Sure.
There was a lot of resets that probably took me maybe like an hour to do just that one mission.
Oh, God.
But it's because it has so many cool moving parts to it. And there were so many opportunities when I got into that level of okay, let's just try this and see if it works. I'm like, holy shit, that kind of works. Should I keep trying this on every reset? Well, maybe, or maybe I should try this other thing and see if that works a little bit better.
Hell yeah.
And playing with those mechanics I found to be really, really fun. That's just a really good game, and it's one I'm definitely going to be talking about in December.
Well, I appreciate that. We got a lot of news to get into, so we're gonna switch over to the casual report here. Let's get into the news, Johnny.
Okay.
Do we have to?
Do you want to talk about first?
Well, nothing happened this week, right?
Yeah, nothing
at
all.
That's also true.
Something happened
and then didn't happen.
Okay. Who's leading the news here, Chase?
I don't know.
Yeah, let's talk about Helldivers first.
Sure.
So
you guys won't stop, so why stop now?
It's a good video game, except for when it was bad.
Oh my god. So when Helldivers launched, it was supposed to enforce a rule where you had to sign into a PlayStation Network account in order to play the game.
Which is what all Sony backed
games. Yes. Ghost of Tsushima is gonna have this with their multiplayer.
I have not had to sign into my PlayStation account on any of my PlayStation games so far on Steam.
For multiplayer though, I'm saying that's probably going to be something that they would want to enforce because they want that sweet, sweet user data.
Yeah.
So they did not have it enabled at first because the servers were cooked. Everything was on fire. It was very, very bad for the first couple of weeks. Things smoothed out. And then last week they put out an announcement on Steam that starting, I think what was supposed to be this week or sometime this month, you would have to link your Helldivers game to a PSN account. And it's been on sale in all of these countries that do not have PlayStation Network support.
Steam is available lots more places than PlayStation.
Yes.
And so you had the CEO of Arrowhead coming out and trying to do damage control because people were upset because they paid money for this, and I live somewhere that I'm just going to lose access to the game.
Yeah, you live in Bali or something.
Yeah.
Well, we don't support Bali. Sorry.
And it just put Arrowhead in this terrible position. Sony doubled down. They're like, no, this is going into effect. Then it did go into effect. There was 177 countries where you could not play Helldivers any longer. And then they're like, well, wait a minute. We're a corporation. We do like money. And they backpedaled and they undid it. So
in the course of this week,
I think you kind of buried the lead, which was the community part.
Yeah. The community really, it had over 200,000 negative reviews on Steam.
300,000.
Oh my God. Okay. So it went from mostly positive to mostly negative in the span of a week. But the community has said someone made a cape showing the bar graph on Steam saying this should be a cape in the game to tie it into the lore. So it seems like
once that decision was reversed, the game got another 200,000 positive reviews. So it's starting to even.
What do they call it? Operation something.
Yeah, something kind of cringe, but whatever.
I believe there is some backlash, though, still going on because the community manager during the whole thing
was fired,
I believe, because they were encouraging people to negatively review the game.
Yeah.
Which, good praxis, I guess. I probably wouldn't have done it at my job,
no,
to be honest.
No, as a community manager, maybe say, I understand if you feel that way, but don't actively encourage people to do that.
Right. Yeah, I feel like there's a better way to play that one, but I believe people are trying to get the community manager rehired now that the thing has been reversed, good luck.
And this is the scary thing about these kinds of communities. So I was a Destiny player, still kind of am. I just am living clean right now. I don't have to worry about it. But I've definitely seen this same kind of thing with Bungie, where they're so open at one point that the community feels like they're a part of the developer. And you kind of get that same parasocial relationship that you see with podcasters, like a lot of people have with us. Like yeah, they feel right, like absolutely. They're our friends when we're not.
I can't walk down the street in St. Yeah. Louis, Missouri.
Wait, are we not friends?
Well, oh, we're friends.
You know, okay, good.
You're Johnny's friend, but you know, parasocially, I guess you're our friend.
parasocially, okay, that's all I wanted.
But then, because people feel like they have that sense of ownership, then when something bad happens, they feel even worse and feel like they can lash out even more. And I've seen it happen with Bungie a lot, where you get death threats, you get community managers who leave, who are like, I can't take this community anymore. And it's because it's so tight-knit at one point that you really feel that betrayal, which Arrowhead has definitely been doing. Like you said, the CEO has been out there on Twitter all the fucking time and, mm-hmm. and making jokes about, oh, no, you didn't see that thing. That's not a robot. Whatever the fuck. I don't know. And it's gotten so personal that now when it gets bad, it also gets personal, but in the bad way. And that is scary.
Yeah.
Even when it's not their fault, even when this is mostly a Sony problem, it led to all those negative reviews. That hurt.
Why would anybody like want to partner with Sony now after that? You had one of the best things.
Well, I'll tell you why, Johnny, because they sure as shit don't want to partner with Microsoft.
That's great. Great point, Chase. So Microsoft also.
It's a two-party system, Johnny.
Yep.
If you don't like Microsoft, you gotta vote blue.
God damn it. Vote blue no matter who. So Microsoft yesterday closed three studios and merged another one with the Elder Scrolls Online developer. Mm-hmm. So the studios impacted were Arcane Austin.
Gone.
Developers of Prey, which I know a lot of people really enjoyed.
Yep.
Tango Gameworks, makers of Evil Within and Hi-Fi Rush. Alpha Dog Games, makers of that mobile Doom game, Mighty Doom, last year. They are being closed. Roundhouse Studios are being absorbed by the Elder Scrolls Online developer, ZeniMax Online Studios. And this came in the form of an email from Matt Booty, who's been making a real ass of himself since sending this email out.
The pun was right there, and you didn't take it.
Who's Matt Booty?
He's the head of Microsoft Games. Sorry, Chase.
It's fine.
And so that happened, and everyone was very confused and upset because you know, Redfall was not a critical or commercial success, but I was reminded that all of these people are just liars and you shouldn't believe anything that they say ever.
Correct.
Whenever they are addressing the public, they say, oh, no, you know, these things happen. Pete Hines said Redfall is going to be being played by people in 10 years on Game Pass. And they're, you know, we believe in standing by our product and et cetera, et cetera.
And that's going to be shut down completely. The game is.
Yeah. They believe they're going to refund people or something for the DLC that they already bought in the deluxe edition.
That it was almost finished, apparently.
That game.
Oh, well, that's good.
Oh, shit.
Yeah. Tango Gameworks, who put out Hi-Fi Rush last year, which won some awards and was a critical
darling. My top 10. We don't have to say any of the other awards.
The highest honor it could possibly.
Yeah, really. Truly.
We can move on. Done. No thanks. But, we got it.
But they also said, oh no, it meant all of our, it exceeded our expectations. That studio is being closed. And the founder of that studio, I can't remember his name, but I remember him making a comment about how he felt he was leaving this studio that he founded in good hands. And he tweeted yesterday, Tango Gameworks closed, period, sad. And mm-hmm. I think that sums it up pretty nicely. So that all happened. It's not really, there's, I haven't seen any numbers yet, like for the, like the amount of people that were impacted by this, but well,
this is
I would
in addition to 1900 already.
Yep. 1900 earlier this year after the finalization of the merger with Activision Blizzard. And then today, moments before we began doing this podcast. And another thing, Jason Schreier reported today at Bloomberg that Microsoft is, or Xbox is planning more cuts after studio closings.
Okay.
And they began offering voluntary severance agreements to producers, quality assurance testers, and other staff at ZeniMax. So they're asking people to let, like, to voluntarily be let go, basically. So some other form of culling is coming at some point in the near future. And then tonight, Ash Parrish from The Verge reported that Matt Booty again, we need smaller games that give us prestige and awards. You know, maybe games like Hi-Fi Rush, which gave them prestige and awards. Oh, wait, they fucking closed Tango Gameworks.
Well, in addition to that, also, like, one of the things that Microsoft has historically struggled with is making a dent in Japan. Like, they just don't have...
Yes, for years, Chase. And/or games. For years, they have talked about this.
Okay, calm down, Johnny.
Let's foothold in Japan. You had a fucking studio that had an award-winning game that they put out, and you just shut the fucker down. Like, why? So some asshole can buy another yacht, like, because he wants his Microsoft stock to go up by 0.25%.
Yeah, like that's why. It's really that simple. It comes down to returns.
I hate it. It doesn't we've matter.
About capitalism on the show before. This is how it works.
How is this going to affect all of the other studios that have been gobbled up by Microsoft over the last however 6 years? You know, if you can put out something that is a success by every available metric, you know what? Blackwater, they're really wanting a nice return this quarter. We're going to have to shut you down. I'm sorry. And then you have asshats like Mikey Barr out there saying, hey, feel bad for the millionaires. They're really, this is really tough for them to destroy people's lives.
Well, again, I think it just feels silly too.
Because, like, it's like, don't they always tout about having Game Pass and, like, trying to sell, like, not even an individual game, but an entire service you're supposed to get?
It feels presumably. Like them saying that dream is dead. Like,
I feel like they're getting out of video games. That's personally my pet theory, is this is all just slowly them unwinding and just saying that AAA gaming is just not viable in the current market space, at least for the way that they want to do it, and we're just going to not have
Xbox anymore. Or every studio they've acquired just becomes support studios for Call of Duty.
Well, I mean, there have been rumors in the past that they've been trying to spin off Xbox into like its own thing that Microsoft doesn't have to have.
Yeah.
But also it does extremely well for Microsoft. It's one of their biggest.
It's the third largest earner.
Yeah. It makes a lot of money for Microsoft, and Microsoft already makes a lot of money. They make more money than.
Would you like to know how much money they made last year, Chase?
It's a lot. I know.
It was 200 and. No, their gross profit was $146.052 billion, a 7.69% nice increase from 2022. Gaming revenue delivered over $7 billion of revenue in quarter two of 2024.
There's a few things I have lingering in my mind. Chase, if you're cool, I hop in here. I think that this is a situation where I'm trying to look at like what's been going on in the industry at large, and I can't make left or right of that. Mike, if you go back, and I, you know, Johnny, you've tried to collect along with a lot of other outlets for your writing and others, just a timeline of events, and you can go back and see where there's some truths and lies. But at the end of it, I'm looking at what's going on, and I'm trying to make sense of. They've already said they're not going to put a half step out, and Sony's all but confirmed a pro PS5 at this point in time. Nintendo put out their announcement that sometime this year, you're going to hear about a Switch 2 or a successor to that. Microsoft has been admittedly losing this race significantly. They've also been talking about branching into other mediums, whether it be branding the new Meta Quest 3 with an Xbox version for Game Pass. Mm-hmm. My whole thing is they're looking ahead.
Hi-Fi Rush just came out on PlayStation.
Yeah, I get that. I think that was also them trying to diversify it and to see if that would click. I'm thinking that they know something in their books, basically that they're either going to have to come in with the new hardware, which they're working on because that leaked, at a significant loss to compete with Nintendo and Sony at a new step, or they have projected and seen something else that's going to disrupt at some point, and they're shedding fucking water for the most ludicrous reasons, because they made short-term decisions to boost their reputation as a publisher through Game Pass by acquiring successful little indie darlings and then building that out to big things like fucking Bethesda. But those bets aren't paying off. And I'll tell you what I said on the preview, and I'll double down on it. I don't think that you're going to see their biggest game on this calendar year, which is Hellblade, come into critical reception. And they're probably already looking at losses at that studio, which they're also reporting more problems.
There's been zero marketing for that.
There's been zero marketing for it. And they've, at this point in time, obviously not just from a
Game Awards.
Yes. They have unfortunately ran more layoff sessions this year.
I have some thoughts about Mr. Keeley as well.
The games that they've put out, and there's a problem with it, but I don't know what they're seeing, because they're making decisions for a year from now plus. They really are.
Yeah. I mean, you talked about with like a next console selling at a loss. All consoles except for Nintendo amazingly sell at a loss. Like the whole point is trying to get them into people and then selling them on the software later. But Microsoft has even been taking more of a loss this generation because they're trying to get Game Pass into people's hands. Because that's what they think is still the silver bullet of, if we sell the subscription service, we can even put money on games that we don't think are going to do very well, like a Pentiment or like a Hi-Fi Rush. And, you know, we can get some critical acclaim out of that. We can get people to try Game Pass. We can get people to get into the ecosystem. And then you dominate from there. And they have done that in some aspects. Like we've talked a lot about how Game Pass is kind of amalgamating all of gaming, and how it can be scary, especially for people who have seen how Google has said, well, mm-hmm. we'll just buy a bunch of studios, and then, oh God, we don't want to do video games anymore, and let's get rid of all these people.
Yeah. Or Amazon, or Embracer, totally. Or
yep,
yeah. Like, the list goes on and on.
Bunch of studios, and then are like, "Why won't Bold print when we keep messing with it?" Like, that's the part I feel like the worst about is like, I don't feel like when I see Redfall, like I don't see a game where the developers were like, you know what we really want to do is make this kind of live service co-op.
Yeah.
Shooter thing that we don't really know how to get working.
There were stories where devs talked about how they talked to Microsoft about, like, can we turn this into a single player game because we think it'll be better that way, and it's just not what the game was going to be
at that point. And it's like you see that with a lot of their products. Yeah, I feel like you can see that with a lot of their stuff, and a lot just in the gaming industry in general, where it's like all these even the surefire hits and stuff like are so meddled with and so chasing some sort of golden goose, like Fortnite success that doesn't even really exist for anything.
With Redfall, Phil Spencer and other higher ups within Xbox were like, yeah, we should have done more to help them whenever, like, motherfucker. Yeah,
they didn't blame the studio, they blamed themselves, which is nice until they shut the studio down.
But then what does it matter? Because they shut down the studio that made the game that everyone loved too.
Like,
so it's like,
I can understand, you know, the pains of the business and et cetera, but also the fact that you can just do this on a fucking Tuesday afternoon or whatever. Suddenly people just don't have a job. Like, Are they, have there's, has there been any reporting on like, will they get so many months severance? Like, are they going to like,
it's,
you know,
decisions
like this, it should be illegal.
Yeah.
You should have like for corporations this big that have this much money, this much sway, this much influence, you should not be able to just drop people. You should have to say, hey, 6 months from now,
there should be we're going to shut of, this like,
place down.
Union and, of game developers.
Yes.
Exactly.
Like, yes, Chase, thank you. That is what I was leading to.
I know.
Look what happened to film and TV industry when they tried to pull some BS there. It's like because they had the power that the collectively organized. Like, I mean, there's still a lot of, obviously,
things going on in the industry now, but
at least there's a way to fight back.
Yeah,
this,
motherfucker, this is the most profitable industry in the world.
Microsoft's a really big target. And we have...
Yeah.
I think you can probably go back on our notes and our episodes in 2024, but even tonight, we wrote the notes on Monday, and we had to split hairs on which studios we talked about closing tonight. That's the bigger problem right now. It's not just Microsoft. It's that there's an unchecked trend happening not only in video games, but across the job industry where these companies that were able to create jobs in a short sight have no long-term vision, plan, or desire for it. It's been heartbreaking.
Think that far ahead. Like when you're living from quarter to quarter.
Yeah, like, you're literally not allowed to.
And the Microsoft one hurts the most.
Yes.
Because of a number of factors. Like we've seen Bobby Kotick in the past, like laying off people, and we're like, yeah, that guy's a fucking dick. Of course that's what he's gonna fucking do. And what happens with Microsoft, kind of similar to what we talked about with Helldivers and Sony, is Phil's like there's a personal nature of that because Phil has been presented as one of us.
He's the cool executive.
Yeah, he wears the video game t-shirts. He plays the video games. Mm-hmm. He knows what it's all about. And so for a decision like that to happen under his watch has that kind of personal backlash where people are like, well, fuck, I thought he was protecting us. And then the other problem is that it's so like the goalposts keep moving. And at one point you're like, okay, if you make a crappy game, your game studio might get shut down. That sucks, but it's understandable. And then it's like, well, you know, you made a really good game, but it just didn't sell that well. So, okay, that sucks, but, you know, it's still somewhat understandable. But now you're having games that have success, both critically and commercially, win awards, do all the things it feels like you're supposed to do, are cheap to make, and yet your studio still gets shut down. And so that, I think, is what's really hurting people of there's no rhyme or reason to some of these things, or it doesn't feel like there is. Like, what can you do to protect yourself and your game studio? The answer is, doesn't seem like fucking anything. Like, you can potentially get screwed either way,
just
on the whim of whatever.
And even, like, that's... What a stupid
here's fucking what I'll say. System. I hate to end on a somber note like this with the story, but we love games here. We're going to continue to celebrate games. We're going to continue to celebrate the people who make games. And we're going to talk openly about our frustrations. It's hard. We're all in an awkward spot because it's hard to celebrate these things knowing how toxic the industry has become. And just know that we stand with developers. We want to make sure that these games get a fair shake at being seen by as many people as possible, even though we're an incredibly small outfit here at the Casual Hour. Don't let our size confuse our passion for games. And we care about
Nintendo Switch 2 coming soon.
Yes.
That reminds me, speaking of passion for games, if you could go sign the Free Stellar Blade petition.
I'm actually here from the DEI police, and I'm shutting that stuff down. I've been sent from Sweet Baby Incorporated as the honorary trans LGBTQ executive. I'm here to really, you know, ask the Casual Hour.
You know, we really
did. You watch that Mega 64 video? Because it was great.
I saw some of it. We should really get Grums on the podcast just to, you know, get a little both sides.
I've been trying to cook up something with him, but I also kind of like don't want to associate with him. So
I thought of an idea for that. If you want to hear it, So I thought, like, if you don't have the chance to interview him, if you could somehow get him to go to a Denny's thinking you're going to interview him and then see how long you can keep him in that Denny's for, I feel like that's a good compromise. If you just keep acting like you're almost going
to... My idea to do it via hard drive was not... That pitch was not accepted.
Chuck.
Well, Matt liked the idea. He was just like, I don't know if I care enough about this guy to go through something like that.
Yeah.
So
that's fair.
So we've got a lot going on here. All of us have some outlet that we're chasing with either writing, as Johnny's been alluding to, or some games that we've been making for you all to check out, or at least quick looks at those games, I should say. This past Monday.
We don't make games. We don't want to get shut down.
Yes, correct. Chase and I got together and we checked out Loop Hero. Let me throw up a quick link here for chat if you want to follow along with where you can see all these things a little bit easier.
I have to pick something in pitch.
But we've been checking out Loop Hero on our Casual Monday stream. We also put up a quick look for Odd Sparks and Automation Adventure. I don't know who on the show would play something like that. And then tonight we're telling you about all the shitty things happening to the games industry, but some really cool games that we've enjoyed within that. Tomorrow, another Crab's Treasure will be going up on our YouTube channel for a quick look. And then Friday night, Zoe, Johnny, and myself will be heading out there in that Gray Zone Warfare. And that's our schedule this week. Let's get into, let's start with Chase and have you pitch, and then we'll go to Johnny and Zoe and let you wrap us and get us out of here.
Yeah, I just realized I forgot to post it on Twitter today. I guess I'll do that tomorrow. But there's a new episode of Chase K Plays. There's a new series on Chase K Plays. I'm playing through Advance Wars 2 Black Hole Rising as part of the Advance Wars 1 Plus 2 Reboot Camp, which is not the best version, but it's the easier one to play. That series is called Black Hole, son!
Wow.
I appreciate it. I just like saying it. It's fun to say.
That's bad.
So you can check out that first episode. I recorded the second episode and it'll go out next Wednesday. But I'll keep doing that until I beat Advance Wars 2. That'll be a lot of fun. I also have another podcast I do with our good friend of the show, Pierce Corshane. It's called Pilot Program. We watch the first episode of every television show ever made. Our newest episode came out just recently. It's on One Punch Man. And we talked about why bald people are really strong. We've got one of those here, and I can confirm, strong man.
Very bald. Much so. Very, very bald.
But you can go check out that podcast at shows.acast.com/pilotprogram. And then we announced our next one is going to be on Freaks and Geeks, which I'm very excited about. It's been a while since I've watched Freaks and Geeks, so that'll be a fun one.
Nice. Johnny, you've mentioned it a few times, but what do you got going on in your extracurricular activities?
I had an interview with Alyssa Mercante, the senior editor over at Kotaku, that went up this week.
Nice.
I've been getting some lovely messages from people because she is at the center of the latest wannabe Gamergate nonsense, just getting harassed nonstop on Twitter. Being called all sorts of lovely names, and she was awesome. She was a very nice person, and I really enjoyed our talk. And I also started a Substack where I've been doing some writing, and I wrote about the Xbox stuff. That is in my link tree,
which is in chat. And Zoe, what about you? What do you got going on?
That's a great question. So I did set up all the streaming equipment to come do this podcast. And I do stream, well, 2 years ago I did, but I'm going to start streaming again more. Yes. So find me at Janky Zoe, and that's Z-O-E, but it's Zoe. It was there first. I spelled the correct way.
My freshman algebra teacher was named Zoe, and it was spelled Z-O-E. Her name was Zoe Chen, and she was blonde. She was a blonde with blue eyes. She married.
I feel like, you know, if you call me Zoe, it's also okay, because it is. I do understand it is spelled that way, and I did make these decisions, so I will stand by them. But yeah, I do that. Probably Twitch some Tekken or something.
Cool.
I was doing a Cuphead playthrough at some point. Maybe I'll finish that. I don't know, but I play a lot of games. I like stuff. So find me there. I have the Discord that I think still has a link on my Twitch page, and then there should be a YouTube, and then I have a Mastodon account. under I think the same
name. Dozens of us.
Dozens. Well, I refuse. I hate Elon Musk so much. He ruined Grimes.
None of us is going. None of us are going to.
Feel sad about it.
On this point.
Well, Zoe, thank you so much for hanging out with us on air, and thank you for hanging out with us when we do our Friday night streams, which we'll be back live on Friday with Zoe, Johnny, and myself in the Gray Zone Warfare. Thanks everybody for watching. We'll talk to y'all soon. Bye.
Bye.